what I tried to do in the book is tease out a set of ideas that were radical in the sense that they go to the root of the really big problems and challenges, and oh, by the way, exciting opportunities too, that leaders are trying to deal with in their organizations, but then to offer a set of very practical, tangible takeaways that help you actually make progress. I mean, I've become convinced after 15 years of looking at innovation and creativity in business and in the public sector, the way you make big changes is to make lots of small changes and improvements that collectively add up to something big. And so I think where everybody is today is we need to use these tough times as an opportunity to think big thoughts and really aspire to change the game. And yet, as a leader, wherever you are in the ranks, running a team, running a department, whatever the case may be, you've got to be able to deliver tangible, positive results quickly.
And it's interesting because as I was reading this, it seemed like you actually talk about, hold on, is this the time to be writing about trying new things, being innovative, when a lot of organizations are just really struggling to survive?
Well, I did have a kind of bit of a crisis of confidence because I had what I thought was a great idea for this book. I set out on my research, and you know, it takes a couple of years to really do the kind of in the trenches research I'd like to do. And of course, the world completely fell apart as I started. And I'm saying, yeah, how am I going to urge people on to do great things in business or in government when the world is collapsing all around us? And so what I ultimately concluded was, and I wound up spending lots of time in 25 different organizations, all of whom were making tremendously positive strides in very difficult circumstances. And what I realized is terrible times, tough times, are actually a great time to try to go out and learn what's working, because if things are working well in these circumstances, imagine how these ideas or practice are going to work when the world gets back to normal. So I went from a crisis of confidence to a feeling like actually I was kind of lucky, because being able to be in the belly of the beast, if you will, when these leaders and innovators were doing tremendously positive stuff while most of their colleagues were falling behind, was a great kind of laboratory situation to be in.
And I'm going to quote you to yourself, which is a kind of yeah, exactly. You say, you talk about these innovators. They were not paralyzed by the degree of difficulty associated with their agenda for renewal. In fact, they were energized by it. That to me seems like that can be one of the more challenging parts of this, is you just keep getting almost bludgeoned by bad news. And to keep, particularly if you're a leader, if you're a manager, if you're one of those senior folks, to keep that positive outlook and say, okay, this is an opportunity, that can be really hard.
Well, a big piece of the puzzle to being a leader, and by the way, when I talk about being a leader, I don't mean you're the CEO of a company or you're the, you know, secretary of a cabinet department. To me, the most powerful form of leadership is grassroots leadership. I think of it as impact players, people deep in the trenches of an organization or an agency. Maybe you're running a 100-person department. Maybe you've got a 10-person project team working. I mean, those are ultimately the leaders that really get things done. And to me, such a big piece of this is, as a leader, having, first of all, understanding these are the ideas that I stand for. This is the impact I want to have with my team, with my department in my agency, and these are the ideas I stand for. And I have tremendous confidence in these ideas. And, you know, the great Jim Collins wrote, you know, Good to Great and Built to Last. One of his messages is there's so much mediocrity in the world today. And the signature of mediocrity is not the unwillingness to change. The signature of mediocrity is chronic inconsistency. In other words, what I find in companies and in government agencies is everybody's so scared they'll try anything, and they'll lurch from one management consulting fad to the next, one strategy to cut costs to the next. And it's actually the leaders who are really confident, who stick with what they believe in, that actually get the work of change done. And so confidence is a big piece of this puzzle. So if you can keep your head while all those around you are losing theirs, as a leader, you have a tremendous chance to make an impact. And that's what I saw in the organizations I studied.
Let's talk about one of my favorite chapters is fairly close up to the front, chapter 3, where you talk about the 5 truths of transformation. And those all seem very powerful for me, because those seem like some of the places where people can really get stuck is, okay, how do we do this, particularly in government where these organizations are large? One of them is, essentially, most organizations get stuck in tunnel vision. That's not the way we do business here.
Right, absolutely. I mean, I have seen this so often in so many different settings, which is most leaders in most organizations see the world the way everybody else sees the world. They're all chasing after the same opportunities they think are out there. They're all missing the same opportunities to make a difference or do things differently, because it feels like, hey, let's just play it in the middle of the road. I mean, how bad can it be if we do things the way everybody else does things? But to me, what I've come to appreciate is the leaders in organizations that do best in difficult times understand the middle of the road really has become the road to nowhere. And the question is, how do you become the most of something? How do you make a really big bet on an idea you believe in and stick with it? And so, to me, one of the very first principles of making change is getting people excited about a new point of view, a new line of sight, a new way of making sense of the world. One of the business leaders I write about, he talks about it as, quote-unquote, reminiscing about the future, which kind of seems like an oxymoron. But the idea is you are able to get so clear with your people about this is the kind of service we want to deliver, these are the kind of results we want to have, that you can talk about the future as if it exists already and get people really excited about bringing the organization there. So seeing a different game and getting beyond this kind of tunnel vision that afflicts people is really one of the main challenges of leadership, particularly in government, I think, where people tend to spend long periods of time, many, many years in the same agency or working on the same problems. The challenge, and so the good news is you get tremendous experience and expertise.
Yeah.
But the challenge is, how do you let what you know not limit what you can imagine? And to me, that's one of the hazards of expertise.
The other one that I just loved was organizations that have a rich tradition, lots of success. Well, that history can really be both a curse and a blessing. You say the challenge is to break from that past without really disavowing it. Know that you've had success, and yet also understanding that, guess what, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're always going to be successful.
Well, I think that's one of the really important messages, particularly for the world of public sector and nonprofit. There is this feeling, and certainly as the co-founder of Fast Company, particularly in the early glory days of the internet boom, the sense was, everything is new, and the whole idea is to destroy the past and shake things up and break from convention and all that kind of stuff. And what I came to appreciate doing the research for Practically Radical is so many of the leaders, particularly those running, long-established organizations with really rich histories that have somehow just kind of lost their way in a world of new technology and new markets and new expectations, is that one way to instill confidence about doing things really differently in the future is to, in a way, rediscover and reinterpret your own past. Figure out, hey, why were we such a dynamic and successful force 50 or 60 years ago? And sure, times have changed, but what can we learn from that? One of my favorite nonprofit examples is the Girl Scouts, which, is just, in the last 5 years, undergone a tremendous, tremendously positive transformation of its strategy, the programs it offers, the branding. It's kind of, in a weird way, become cool again after, for many, many decades, everybody, it's kind of iconic, but kind of boring. And one of the ways they really created the energy and confidence to change is to go back to the founding of the Girl Scouts back in 1912. They're about to celebrate their 100th anniversary next year. And they reread the initial strategy papers and memo stuff from Juliet Gordon Lowe, the very kind of radical, if you will, activists, social activists who started the Girl Scouts. And they realized, my God, if Juliet Gordon-Lowe could see us now, she would be embarrassed by how mainstream, how bland, how boring we became. And so their slogan, as they rethought a lot of their services, which were getting a lot of resistance from the old guard, was WWJD. Not what would Jesus do, but what would Juliet do? And couldn't we kind of reclaim that sense of renegade? I mean, this, by the way, you know, after all, she founded the Girl Scouts before women had the right to vote. She had the, you know, girls doing all kinds of physically active and community activist kind of stuff. And that remembrance of the past, strangely enough, gave the people who are trying to lead the future of the Girl Scouts a sense of confidence that we're not doing anything that our founders weren't prepared to do 100 years ago. And so, I mean, I think that's a small example of looking to what made you great in the first place to help you become great once again.
We're talking to Bill Taylor. He is the author of Practically Radical, Not So Crazy Ways to Transform Your Company, Shake Up Your Industry, and Challenge Yourself. Great book. I highly recommend it.
I'm going for the award for the longest book.
Well, Practically Radical is easy. You sort of took the opposite direction of these just one word things. So
I got paid by the word.
There you go. One of the things you talk about is the job of the change agent, and that sort of floats throughout this book.
Yeah.
One of your rules is the job of the change agent is not just to surface high-minded ideas. It's to summon a sense of urgency inside and outside the organization and to turn that urgency really into action. Wow.
Well, that's why, I do think so many well-intended leaders fall down when it comes to rallying their colleagues to the cause. And that's why I think one of the really crucial skills for being an innovator and being a change agent inside any kind of organization is being a really great storyteller. I mean, ultimately, I think rank and file colleagues, I mean, I guess they respond to fear and worry, doubt, but it's not a very energizing thing. And nor do they, if you're in business, just respond to, well, we can have, you know, better shareholder performance or whatever.
Right.
The question is, you know, we live in such an age of problem uncertainty. We all wrestle with this whole, you know, the cliche, what gets you up in the what keeps you up at night? What are the problems and worries that nag at you? But the real question that drives great performance is what gets you up in the morning? What makes you and your colleagues more confident than ever, more determined than ever, more energetic than ever, in a world that on most days seems more troubling and uncertain than ever? And leaders who can help their colleagues answer that question and get them excited about the impact they can have, the new ways they can do things, those are the leaders that go from ideas to action. And so being able as a leader to maintain that positive sense of urgency, I think, is just so, so crucial.
And one of the things you talk about is doing that within almost a bureaucracy, and I don't mean that in the governmental sense of the word. Every organization has bureaucracy, because that bureaucracy can sort of be that, that's not the way we do business here. Yeah. And these sort of radical thinkers can be the one who say, hold on, why? They can be the people who keep asking why. And sometimes those people really can, they're a pain in the neck. We want them to go away because we don't want to constantly have to address the why question.
I do think ultimately, and when we think about in the culture we live in, with whether it's business leadership or government leadership, and you think about making change, we tend to think about, you know, moving boxes around on the org chart, or if you're in private companies, you know, changing the product mix or the portfolio mix, or if you're in a government agency, you know, no longer offering certain services or whatever the case may be. And I think ultimately the real work of change is transforming the energy and behaviors of rank and file people in the organization. And that really has very little to do with the formal org chart and the boxes and bubbles and the bureaucracy. And it has everything to do about being able to paint a really compelling and attractive picture of the new kind of organization you want to have, this whole reminiscing about the future business. And then as a leader, being able to make it really, really personal and to get people excited, not just about the kind of organization they could be part of, but excited about what it could feel like to come to work on Monday morning in this new organization. And I have no problem with the idea that most people at every level of an organization think about themselves first. I mean, we're all very, you know, we're all human beings and we're all kind of self-absorbed in that way. And to me, if leaders at any level can be very clear about the linkage between this is the kind of agency or organization we're trying to build, this is how we're going to, you know, deliver really tremendous value in the marketplace, and this is why it's going to be more fun to work here than it's ever been before, why you're going to learn more when you come to work than it's ever been before, why you're going to enjoy the colleagueship of your fellow employees more than you ever will before. That's the kind of stuff that turns ideas into action, not, you know, we're no longer going to have the vice president of this,
right.
He or she is going to become the vice president of that. There is a real human fabric. But everything I do kind of is focused on the connection between ideas and people. And to me, that's where all the action is. Do you have a crisp, clear, distinctive set of ideas about where you want to lead your department, your team, your agency? And can you rally flesh and blood human beings around the cause of those ideas, not just because they make sense in the marketplace, but because they're really compelling, fun, interesting in the workplace as well.
And the nice thing, and as I was reading that particular section, it seemed to me that this is an area where the government actually they have built in to their organizations, people care about the mission. That's by and large why they come to government to become feds or become related to government in some form or fashion. They want to protect the environment. They want to help the homeless. They want to protect the homeland. They want to defend the country. They're very passionate about that mission.
That is such a huge point. And it's funny because I spend some amount of time in the book showing how hard for-profit private sector companies have to work to create that sense of cause and mission. And it's certainly doable in the private sector, but you're absolutely right. So many people in so many parts of the government have chosen that work because it is so in sync with the values they have as human beings, whether it's, as you say, protecting the environment or protecting the country or delivering human services or whatever the case may be. And I really do think one of the principles of leadership and change today is for any organization is not do you think differently from everybody else, and that's really important, but do you and your people care more than everybody else? And I think folks in government intrinsically come to the work with a sense of commitment, a sense of mission, a sense of caring, a real sense of the cause that should create the capabilities for embracing change and innovation. It's why it also, I don't want to editorialize, but it's why I, when I see the public conversation these days about tight budgets in government and the demonization, sometimes implicitly, sometimes explicitly, about government agencies and the people who work there, I just find it so wrong-headed and so off-putting, because how do you expect people to do great work and their best work and embrace new ways of working if the clamor and conversation around them is constantly belittling and demeaning that which they do? And so, you know, but I do agree heartily with the proposition that people who have chosen this career for themselves should be in a position to embrace change even more openly than folks in the private sector.
Let me ask you one last question, then I'll let you go, because you've been very generous with your time. My favorite of the five lessons was, in a business environment that never stops changing, change agents can never stop learning. That, to me, seems like when we say that's not, if anyone utters the phrase, that's not how we do business here,
right.
Think twice about what you're saying. Those words just suck innovation and even thought out of an organization.
Well, I tend to end every interaction, you know, I give a lot of talks and so on to business audiences. I tend, whenever I'm talking to leaders in any setting about the work of innovation and change, I try to leave them all with what I think is the most important question for leaders anywhere. And it's right to what you were saying, is are you learning as fast as the world is changing? To me, that's what you sign up for today when you sign up to be a leader at any level in an organization. The job today is not just to kind of out-hustle or out-muscle everybody else. The job as a leader is to help you and your colleagues outthink everybody else. And so you have to be in the business of learning as fast as the world is changing. And that means keeping a mind open to new sources of ideas, new ways of doing things, new forms of intellectual stimulation. And the minute you start closing your mind off to that stuff and saying, hey, I don't have time, this is how we do things, that almost guarantees that you won't be able to keep learning as fast as the world is changing.
So give people one thing you hope they take away from the book.
Always push yourself to find a new source of new ideas. Go to a conference you have no business being at because it's outside your comfort zone. If you're in the government, visit. There's all kinds of kind of business tourism today. Go visit a company that's a really exciting, cool organization that's not necessarily connected to something you do on a day-to-day basis, but may open your eyes and take down those blinders in your tunnel vision, just in little ways or in big ways. Get yourself out of the places where you spend the vast majority of your time and try to go look in the world in new ways.